today, looking back at 10 years of the world's most popular photo sharing app.
When Instagram was founded 10 years ago, the camera phones were so terrible back then, even on the iPhone. You needed to do something to make it look more artsy or professional. And so you'd apply a filter, and it trained us all to accept that that which is on Instagram portrays life as more beautiful and more perfect than it actually is.
I'm drinking a matcha latte here, but I don't really like matcha lattes. I just thought the green would look good with pink background.
Right. Next, I move on to the highlight and shadow functions. Sometimes I like to add the orange function to the highlights because it makes everything pop a little bit more. And for the shadows, I usually add a blue or a red, and I only leave it up one or two because I don't want to overdo it again. The skin tool is actually really nice. If your skin looks really bright and red, this one's really great to use. I like to move it over to the right side because it kind of evens out the skin tones if you have any red blemishes. Makes you look a little bit more tan too. Always a good thing.
And now that our camera phones are better, and now that we've adapted this idea that what is on Instagram is essentially art, we have allowed ourselves to fake it a little bit.
When you're posing, you kind of want to make triangle shapes with your arms to your body. Even when you're sitting down, you want to have those triangles in the way that your legs are folded.
And go out of our way, not just to alter our photos, but to alter our very behavior to what is Instagrammable.
I think my good angle is anything above like the chin.
Anything from, above like, the chin.
Below the chin, you get like that double chin. You don't really like that, but when you're looking up.
Sarah Freer is a tech reporter based in San Francisco and has watched the meteoric rise of Instagram. From its humble beginnings as a startup with a handful of employees to becoming an $100 billion company, the app has had a huge impact on business, on popular culture, and also on our behaviour. From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, 10 years of Instagram, how one photo app changed the world. Sarah, Instagram launched in 2010 at a time when there were already a lot of ways to share photos online through sites like Facebook, and there were ways to edit them through apps like Hipstamatic. What did Instagram offer that was different?
Instagram offered us something so simple and easy to use that it took a lot of the guessing out of it. You could only post a square photo, which in its constraint inspired creativity, sort of like how you could only post 140 character tweets. It offered the filters, which made those photos better. But I think the most vital thing that Instagram did early on was it understood the cultural context of its product. It wasn't just trying to get a lot of users. It was trying to get the right users in the very beginning, the trendsetters, the people who could essentially become early influencers for Instagram.
The first one was Snoop Dogg.
Snoop Dogg, yeah.
Snoop was so the
Snoop,
first?
Snoop was Snoop. A, he really like joined early and just, you know, early I think adopter. Early adopters.
And that stuff matters, right? Like Snoop makes it cool. He gives his stamp of approval and people flow in behind him.
You've got.
And so they reached out to artists. They reached out to musicians. They reached out to people who they thought would create good content. It created this feeling of exclusivity around Instagram, made it more of a luxury product than a mass market product.
So who were the people behind it?
Kevin Systrom and Mike Krieger, they're these two Stanford graduates.
Could you ever have dreamed being where you are today back then?
No, I think we started, you know, knowing that we wanted to bring this out to the world, but this is kind of beyond our wildest dreams when we were getting started back then.
I remember looking at Mike and being like, I think we're on to something. Meanwhile,
we had in Kevin somebody who fancied himself more like a Renaissance man. He would get obsessed about very creative, specific things like making the perfect cup of coffee. And then he meets Mike Krieger, who is so much more of an engineer in depth than Kevin is. But Mike is also incredibly well versed in the arts. He loves reading, he plays a 12-string guitar, and these men connect on these little hackathons that they're doing in San Francisco coffee shops during the rush to build mobile apps.
Okay, so two very creative men behind Instagram. Where did the idea for the app come from?
Kevin Systrom was a self-improver. He would get deep into music. He became a DJ on his boarding school campus. But he also ended up studying abroad in Florence, Italy. And when he was there, he took a photography class. He liked to use the best version of everything. So he had this camera that was the best he could afford at the time. And his instructor, a man named Charlie, took the camera away and instead handed him a plastic Holga, just like this camera that it's very low quality, only takes square photos. And Charlie says that you have to learn that art is not about perfection. It's about creativity. And so Kevin has this new camera and he has to learn to see the world in a way that brings out the beauty, even if the format is not the most technically perfect or the most polished. And so he understands that it's actually not about the image quality. All of these photo apps of Flickr, for instance, were saying, we can take bigger and bigger files of your photos. And that was really not what people needed. They wanted a place where regular people, you and I, who are not photographers, could post our grainy pictures as if we all had Holgas in our pocket.
So on the 6th of October, Kevin and Mike launch Instagram with a photo taken by Kevin.
The first Instagram photo was of your girlfriend's foot with a stray dog.
Yeah.
But it was maybe the first filter that was even more consequential.
Had I known that that was going to be the first photo on Instagram and that Instagram would get to this place where it has 500 million people using it around the world monthly, I would have tried a little bit harder.
And the app took off immediately. What were those early months like for them?
When the app took off, essentially, the founders were trying to keep it alive.
What was it like on day one when it was you two guys in the coffee shop? Like, where did you start on that ground floor?
We started in a small co-working space called Dog Patch Labs, but it was basically on a pier in San Francisco. Didn't have heat, so late nights, I remember looking over and Mike's got on this giant parka with like the fur around the thing and you can see his breath as he's coding.
And that's the most they could do. They built this very simple product that had all these ideas of the things they could add to it, the ways they could improve it, the ways they could market it. But they didn't get around to much of that because it was so popular that the servers kept crashing.
We were sitting there watching us cross a million, and it was like, you know, 999,999. And then it flipped to a million. And we were just like, did we just do that? Like, did it happen? Who is that person and who are these people? I actually think we looked up who that person was.
And poor Mike Krieger, the co-founder, was fixing the servers at all hours of the night. As soon as more popular users joined, it would crash again. It really all would come to a head when Instagram became more popular with celebrities, Justin Bieber in particular.
You're 15 and you don't even, your CD isn't out. People found you how on YouTube?
Yeah, I mean, I was in a singing competition like a while back. I was 12 years old and my friends and family that couldn't make it wanted to see me. So I posted those videos on YouTube.
When he joined, so did the throngs of tween fans. And these fans were just, every time Justin Bieber would post, be so thrilled and flood it with comments and emojis, and the servers would crash. And so they really didn't have time to hire a lot of people. They just were trying to keep the lights on.
I remember when it launched, it was huge and it was the app to have. You know, all my friends got it when they got their camera phones. And I actually went back and had a look at my account today and looked at when I first posted, which was in 2012. And incidentally, it was a very grainy photo of a cat. But more importantly to this story, 2012 was the year that Instagram was acquired by Facebook, the most popular social network in the world.
A company with only 13 employees bought today by Facebook for $1 billion.
Is Zuckerberg going to strangle this baby at birth, or will he allow it to grow into something useful and indeed profitable?
No, I think what he's going to do is rebrand it, maybe something like Facebook, Instagram, something like that.
And you've spoken to people who worked at Instagram at the time. How did they find out that it had been bought? And what was that moment like? You know, what were they told?
Imagine 13 people who had just spent the last couple of weeks barely sleeping because they're trying to launch the Android version of this app. And Kevin Systrom and Mike Krieger, the founders, call them all into the office at 8 a.m. on a Monday. And then they learn that Instagram has in fact been sold to Facebook for $1 billion, which is more than any mobile app had ever been sold for. And it was just a shock. And then they all get in a little bus and they go meet Mark Zuckerberg. And then they're suddenly on this gigantic corporate campus with all of its rules and all of its systems and procedures. And they're being told that this is their future. This app was only alive for 18 months before it was sold. And then to have it sold to a company that they saw as their foe, essentially, was really just heart-wrenching. And what compounded the heart-wrenching nature of this sale, everyone who worked there had messages from friends and family and acquaintances saying, oh my God, I can't believe it. You're a millionaire now. This is crazy.
Basically, you're counting the number of employees on your hands. And those people are definitely walking away with a lot of money today.
But it turns out that the early Instagram employees didn't get rich. For the most part, they just got little raises. So I think their stories that they're telling me are colored by that later revelation they had about how this really wasn't a life-changing moment for them financially. And then some of them allowed themselves to be excited, because if you're joining Facebook, that means that the thing that you built has a chance to reach so many more people.
So the promise of joining this giant company with all this expertise to work on a social problem together, that was the thing that really made it work.
Why did Facebook want Instagram? And why did Instagram need Facebook?
Yeah, so Instagram is great, right? I mean, they're this super talented group of engineers. They're building this amazing product.
Instagram was the first app to fully exploit our relationship with our phones and teach us to use the camera component in a way that felt irreplaceable. And Facebook was really failing in that department. They didn't have any answer to the rise of mobile. And that was actually a huge component of the skepticism around Facebook's initial public offering, which, by the way, happened only a month after the Instagram acquisition. Facebook tried to build their own version of Instagram, but it just wasn't in their bones. And so for Mark Zuckerberg, who is incredibly interested in ensuring that Facebook remains dominant, remains the main social network that people go to, he's always on the lookout for who is competing with us. How can we either copy them, crush them, provide an alternative, or acquire them?
And that question of whether it was fair that Facebook was allowed to buy Instagram is one that is still being discussed today. Mark Zuckerberg defended the acquisition at a congressional hearing back in July this year.
I think with hindsight, it probably looks like obvious that Instagram would have reached the scale that it has today, but at the time, it was far from obvious. It was not a guarantee that Instagram was going to succeed. The acquisition has done wildly well, largely because not just of the founders' talent, but because we invested.
Since Facebook purchased Instagram, the app has continued to grow enormously, and it's developed new features like video sharing.
It's 15 seconds of beautiful video that you can record very easily.
And stories, which is where you can post on your profile videos or photos that stay there for 24 hours before disappearing. They brought out IGTV.
Reimagine what video is on mobile, and we want to share it with you today. IGTV is an app for watching long-form vertical video from your favorite creators.
It's really come a long way from those early beginnings of square photos. And it's also helped cultivate a new type of online celebrity, the influencer.
A lot of you guys have been asking me about what I do as an influencer because I quit my corporate job, and I'm doing Instagram and all my social media full time.
Being an influencer is probably harder than having a normal job because you're constantly worried about what you look like.
I'm gonna get some ass shots in there.
But people, who are they, and did this happen organically?
It is essentially people who created a space where they are building an audience for a visual blog that can then resonate with people when they decide to monetize it by promoting products or selling their own merchandise or building enthusiasm around an idea. And there are millions of people who do this around the world. And you know about the travel influencers.
You post a picture or you tell the hotel you're going to do a story about them and tag them. They're going to welcome you with open arms.
The next location is the Japanese cemetery. It's 20-25 minutes away from the main attractions here in Singapore, but they have this very long tunnel of flower arches that are so pretty for photos.
And when I look at them, Sarah, all I think is, are you actually enjoying your holiday?
But no, it's not a holiday, it's work. It's really, it is a job. It's everyday content. These are not people sharing their lives. These are people curating a persona for you that will entertain you and get you to feel like they are a trusted source of information about something.
Who gets this charmed life, though? Is this available to anyone, or does Instagram ensure that particular people can become influencers?
Unlike Facebook and Twitter, Instagram has an opinion about what the best kind of content on Instagram looks like and is. And they have actually spent a lot of time investing in the people that they think are up-and-coming talent. They are picking out people who have interesting accounts in their minds and promoting them on the @Instagram page. So Instagram, the company, is an incredibly influential part of who becomes famous on Instagram. And there are some people who are very strategic about that score and trying to move it ever higher.
Now, I've had my Instagram for a while, and since then, I've grown it to over 7,000 followers, almost 8,000 followers, using only purely organic strategies. Now, I know nowadays it's really easy to buy your way into Instagram success. You can buy followers, you can buy likes, you can buy anything that you want. But for me personally, I've always favored the organic approach, especially if you are using Instagram for your business.
You have the professionals and you have everyone else. And everyone else is looking at Instagram and comparing themselves to the professionals.
It's very interesting. I've interviewed a couple of influencers over the years, and a lot of them do come to it very organically, don't they? In that they genuinely post a picture of their life and it happens to really take off, and then they get a feel for it, and then they do begin to curate, as you say. But Instagram drives that, doesn't it, by what it wants on its platform?
One of my favorite stories is about this dog, Tuna.
He's an internet sensation at just 3 years old.
It's just a strange-looking dog. It's got this elongated snout. And the owner of this dog, she didn't really want to take pictures of herself for Instagram, so she started taking pictures of her funky-looking dog. And after a while, she was getting a little bit of a following outside of her friends and family just because of this dog's unique look. Well, in 2013, she wakes up and finds that her dog's following has doubled. And then doubled again. And her friends are messaging her and saying, did you see that Instagram has featured your dog on its @Instagram? The dog, @TunaMeltsMyHeart, is absolutely going viral. She gets a call from TV stations asking to interview her about her weird dog.
What is there to say?
He's a rescue dog. Important thing to know. He loves ladies.
Yes.
He doesn't like blokes.
He prefers ladies. Yeah.
Soon enough, she quits her job as an interior designer. She ends up managing her dog's Instagram account full time.
This funny looking pooch is now embarking on a tuna tour around the United States.
And it's all because of this one Instagram employee. His name is Dan Toppy. He has a personal preference for the dogs that are a little awkward or a little silly looking. And if you look at the dogs that have become famous over the last few years on the internet, that's this one Instagram employee's taste reflecting in our overall culture. And it's just incredible.
I mean, I'm laughing, but that is terrifying in many ways that one person can have that much power in that situation. But it's not just celebrities and influencers, though, is it, who are able to make a lot of money from Instagram? You know, businesses can as well. How are they and how are other individuals able to make money from the app? And how has it changed how some businesses function?
Instagram has completely transformed our economy.
Okay, so today I'm going to be sharing with you the exact strategies you need to turn your Instagram into a really profitable machine that you can use to supercharge your business.
And so if you want to succeed in an industry that is at all visual, you need to have an Instagram account in order to be taken seriously. And actually, that has trickled down to everyday life too. People will tell me, I don't know if I want to date this person because I can't find anything. Their Instagram is private. Should I really go on a date with someone whose Instagram is private? Like,
I've heard that so many times.
What are they trying to hide, right? So if you are in an industry that really requires you to have a personal identity, it's going to be incredibly essential. It really helps explain to people, here's what I'm getting when I work with this person. What influencers have found, if people know more about who you are and what you do every day, they will start to develop a friendship, even a virtual friendship with you, or understand you at a deeper, close level, and then be more willing to cheer for your success. And that's something that Kris Jenner, the mother of the Kardashian empire, understood really early on as well.
How much of their business, how much of the money that your daughters bring in is based on their endorsements of products on social media?
Well, my girls are constantly getting offers to post something for a company or a brand on social media. So they have a fee for a post or a fee for a story, a fee for Facebook, a fee for, you know, they have a fee schedule.
Can you give me a ballpark on the fees?
It's different. It's all over the board. I mean, it's definitely six figures.
And meanwhile, we then spend hours following whatever version of someone's life they've decided to share, or whatever version of life Instagram decides they want us to see. And often then we feel like their lives seem a lot better than ours. How does this impact on people's mental health?
It was unregulated posts on Instagram that led to 14-year-old Molly Russell taking her own life.
A new study out of Britain finds Instagram is the most detrimental social media site for young people. The gram topped the list in terms of negative impact, especially among young women.
There's a lot of thought go into what you post.
Yes, yeah. I take 50 of them to get one good one.
You take 50 pictures to get one picture to post on Instagram?
Yes, same. That's how you got to do it.
Same?
Yes.
Same?
Yes.
And what about you, Gabby?
I've taken 200 just to take like the one good picture.
What we've seen happen is people have taken the metrics they see on Instagram, the follower count, the like count, and they've turned them into judgments of their own behavior. And it has become so high pressured to the point that the company even realizes that it's a problem. It's not good for business.
One of our investors used to say, anyone can create a photo sharing app, not everyone can create a community. So you ask yourself, what's the best way to make a defensible asset there? And it's to make sure that the community stays healthy.
So that's Do you think that Instagram has done enough to curb this, or has it tended to privilege its business interests over the health and well-being of its users?
Instagram has absolutely privileged its business interests, and they will come out and say, oh, we care deeply about this. We have started a well-being campaign.
We believe a lot in giving people the control to make sure that their space feels safe. So the ability to filter out certain words and comments, turn off comments entirely, block people that are making them uncomfortable or just being jerks.
But one thing that I thought was quite interesting is when Instagram announced that they were going to remove like counts on photos, they at the same time were encouraging regular users to sign up for a business version of their account. And if you get a business version, you get to see not just like counts, you get to see the demographics of who looks at your account. You get to see what time of day they look at it, from what countries, in what age group. And we could optimize further. We could see exactly how many people unfollowed us that day, and we could correlate it back to what content we posted and make sure that we're only posting the content that boosts the numbers. What really we've seen after a decade of Instagram, this metric mindset that we now have. And I think that that is incredibly damaging. If you are a young person, you know your angles, you know what lighting works, like you know your personal brand that you're trying to portray. So I think that it is creating a world where we all see ourselves as publishers of our own mini content operations.
After this, Kevin Systrom and Mike Krieger decide to leave Instagram. But why?
Let's catch up now on some business news with our business editor, Stephen Carroll. Stephen, you're starting with big changes at the photo sharing app Instagram today.
Sarah, in 2018, the news broke that Kevin Systrom and Mike Krieger were leaving Instagram.
In a statement, the Instagram CEO said the two founders were taking some time to explore their curiosity and creativity again. Building new things requires that we step back and to understand what inspires us and match that with what the world needs. That's Kevin Systrom there from Instagram.
Why did they decide to step down?
Once Instagram introduced stories, their growth accelerated. And it accelerated right at the point that Facebook was coming under increased scrutiny for their hand in the US presidential election and Brexit, with all the misinformation that flowed, all the polarization in society, and eventually the privacy debacles that followed.
We welcome everyone to today's hearing on Facebook's social media privacy and the use and dish and abuse of data.
We face a number of important issues around privacy, safety, and democracy. And you will rightfully have some hard questions for me to answer.
And as Zuckerberg was dealing with these crises, he was looking at another part of his company, Instagram, and saying, well, maybe the problem with our growth is not necessarily these crises in the media. Maybe it's that all of our users have an alternative to Facebook that actually we are directing them to. He was worried that Instagram's success was going to cannibalize the success of Facebook. And so he started to restrict their resources. And Kevin Systrom and Mike Krieger started to realize that they were no longer given that independence that they were promised when they first made the deal, that they were now just running a department of Facebook. Instagram is now redirecting people to Facebook more often. They are integrating the messaging component of Instagram with Facebook Messenger and WhatsApp. They are giving you more Facebook-like features like notifications and recommendations for accounts to follow, where Instagram used to be a place to introduce you to things you may never have thought you were interested in. Now it's a place to show you more of the same stuff that you've already been interested in.
So being bought by Facebook fundamentally changed Instagram. But how do you think the app might continue to develop over the next 10 years? How might it change?
We are going to see Facebook lean on Instagram to draw new life into Facebook. They're going to turn what was already a pretty commercial product into more something more overtly commercial, where people are going to be selling goods via Instagram. But I think the biggest question in the next 10 years is what comes of all of this antitrust scrutiny when people realize that one company, majority controlled by one man, Mark Zuckerberg, controls two of the most important social networks in our lives. What does that mean for us? And is there harm? And I think that that is what regulators are digging into. And if there are consequences of that, they would certainly come in the next 10 years.
What do you think the story of Instagram tells us about the tech industry and the control it has over our lives?
I just keep going back to the metrics. the fact that we can now measure somebody's cultural relevance in a way that is actually not very accurate because so much on Instagram is fakery. But it's almost like if we were walking around and everyone that we met, we could easily look up their net worth. It's almost like that, but for cultural relevance. And so I think that it has this profound impact on how we judge popularity and fame. It all comes down to, do you have Instagram followers? Do you have Instagram engagement? And I think that is a very tech-centric way of looking at the world. The numbers indicate success. And I think that definition of success is flawed because as we've seen from Facebook's history, growth does not necessarily equal better.
Sarah, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
That was Sarah Freer. Her book about Instagram is called No Filter, and it's available to buy now. In response to this episode, a Facebook spokesperson told us, "We saw Instagram's potential from the start and helped it grow into one of the world's greatest visual platforms." Sarah's book captures Instagram's impact and the ingenuity of its founders. We don't agree with everything in it, especially where it understates the major investments of talent and resources we put into helping grow Instagram into what it is today. Instagram's success is Facebook's success. Thanks to Sarah for speaking to me today. This episode was produced by Sam Colbert and myself, and sound design was by Nicholas Cox. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.